Okay, so one of the things that I've been trying to get for you, No Spin News listeners on the radio and watchers on the firsttv.com and all of our other affiliates, is somebody who was there, who has seen what's going on in the Ukrainian theater, and that includes the refugees. This is an organization called World Central Kitchen. It was founded in 2010 by Chef Jose Andres. It provides meals to poor people and people in need all over the planet. Very fine organization. One of the members of that organization is the mayor of Point Pleasant Beach, New Jersey, nice town on the Jersey Shore. All right, his name is Paul Cantera, and he comes to us now from Point Pleasant. So, Mayor, tell us what you were doing. You were in Poland, I understand, correct?
Yep, we were right on the border at Medyka and at the refugee center in Chemish, a few other places as well.
And what did you do there?
Well, Bill, we went over there in the real early days, right after the unprovoked Russian aggression, and we started seeing the refugees streaming across. Decided to just buy a plane ticket. The town that I'm mayor of, Point Pleasant Beach, we have a tremendous amount of young Ukrainian adults that come into our town every summer and help operate our rides and attractions. So this was a way for us to kind of pay it forward a little bit. We rented a big passenger van, went over there, five suitcases of supplies, $15,000 to go buy more in donations. And while we were over there, we got set up with World Central Kitchen and helped give out meals on the border, as well as helping prep food and understanding their operations a little bit better as well.
Okay, so what did you see that affected you?
It's hard not to be affected over there, right? With close to 2 million Ukrainian refugees already streaming through Poland, which makes up about a 20th of the whole country's population already in terms of Poland. They simply don't have the resources to handle this. It's just a mass swarm of humanity coming across that border, many of whom have no place to go, no resources to take care of them, and they need to get settled into the refugee center and then pushed on to other points throughout Poland and Europe, because cities like Krakow and Warsaw have already signaled that they're completely filled up. But when you look at how disproportionately the population coming across is women and children and elderly, there's virtually no men of fighting age in the group. It really brings things home as well. And they're looking for things like toys and coloring books and, you know, Barbie dolls and things like that to make things a little bit easier.
Yeah, to give some relief to the children. Where do the refugees sleep when they come over? Are there tents? Where do they go?
It's heartbreaking. Obviously, it's really cold over there right now. It dips down into the teens at night. They have an abandoned Tesco Supercenter, which is basically like a Walmart, and they've hollowed it out, and people are just sleeping on the floor, sleeping on cots that have been brought in, sleeping on blankets. They're covering every square inch of that, them, their children. There's pets running around. It's a really surreal scene, and they don't necessarily have everything that they need there as well.
Is the American Red Cross there? I mean, who are the agencies in charge?
The Polish Red Cross is there, and they have good operations. They have a tremendous amount of volunteers. People that are coming in that need medical assistance are finding it pretty readily. There's some groups that have donated some clothing as well. And obviously, World Central Kitchen, as soon as they cross the border, they're putting a hot meal in everybody's hands.
Did you speak to the Ukrainian refugees? I mean, yourself, and if so, what did they say?
We did speak to them, and it kind of spanned the entire gamut. There's a lot of disbelief amongst the Ukrainian refugee population. A lot of them think that they're going home in a week or 2 weeks. But if you look at what's going on in some of the cities on the eastern side of Ukraine and the southern part of Ukraine, where, you know, all of the apartment buildings have basically been bombed and are destroyed, there's going to be such a massive, decade-long or longer rebuilding effort. These people who traditionally don't really speak any language other than Ukrainian, they don't speak English, they don't speak Polish, they don't speak any other European languages, they're going to have a really difficult time trying to resettle and restart their lives at someplace completely new. But speaking to some of the orphans, You know, there's a group, Caritas, that's trying to resettle them throughout Europe. They are completely shocked. They don't know what awaits them. Speaking to some of the elderly people who have left, you know, men of fighting age behind, they're scared for them as well. It's just so much uncertainty and so much sadness. And what really struck us, to be honest, was how similar they are to Americans. They're middle-class people who were living normal lives, believed that Putin was just saber-rattling a couple weeks ago, and now they have one travel suitcase with them, and it's all changed in the blink of an eye.
How do they get to Poland? How are they transported from Eastern Ukraine, Central Ukraine, to the Polish border?
So there are still, as of when we were over there, there's still trains running, especially from Lviv to Medyka. A lot of them arrive at the main train station in Chemish. There's buses that are transporting orphans. There's buses that are transporting refugees. A lot of them are driving, even though there's massive fuel shortages over there. So a lot of these cars are breaking down along the way, and people are literally walking. You know, the lines at the border can be a day long or longer to get across. And as cars are running out, people are simply abandoning them and walking across.
It is unbelievable that this is being caused by one man and one man only. You know, usually it's governments and this, but it's so similar to Saddam Hussein. I was on a Hannity radio show today talking about the similarity between what happened in Iraq and Kuwait and Saddam and Putin, how they're really the same evil person. The Ukrainian people, as you pointed out, you say middle class, but middle class in America, they, you know, it's a different connotation. They don't have a lot of reserve. Right. These people have a lot of money in the bank.
Right.
So what when they show up in Poland, that's what they got. All right. And so now we're talking about, I'd say, about 4 million displaced people over the border and another 6 million within Ukraine itself. So this is a catastrophic occurrence in a violation of human rights to the extent that we haven't seen since the Third Reich and Stalin in Russia. Do you see anything more the United States could do?
So one of the interesting things over there is obviously there's large Russian populations in those areas that are really under major attack right now. And it's galvanized both the Ukrainian individuals and the Russian individuals. They're all equally upset at Putin for what he's doing. A lot of talk about enforcement of a no-fly zone. The MiGs were a big issue as well in terms of you know, how they could find a way to get those into Ukrainian fighter pilots' hands, because Russia still does not obviously control the airspace over there. And money and assistance is what's really needed. Because there are a lot of people who, the term that we heard over and over again, are staying until the bitter end.
Yeah.
And they're not going anywhere. And they're going to need
some
money and resources.
It's an ongoing thing. Absolutely. So tell us how people can get in touch with World Kitchen.
So World Central Kitchen, great organization, WCK.org. People can make donations there. We're actually hosting a huge charity concert at the Jersey Shore in Point Pleasant Beach at Jenkinson's on the boardwalk. We think we're going to raise close to $250,000, and we're going to split it up amongst World Central Kitchen, the Polish Red Cross, and Caritas Poland, that's helping a lot with all the orphans and the refugees.
And when is that concert going to be?
April 10th, 5 to 9 p.m.
All right. We want everybody to try to make it. If you can't, WCK.com. WCK.com. That's easy. Hey, Mayor, thanks very much for appreciate it. You know, if you get any other information, please let us know. And you're doing a very good thing. And thanks again for helping us out tonight. Wholesale prices in February up 10%, highest on record. Way to go, Joe. No, it's COVID. It's Putin. Yeah. Well, what are you doing about it? COVID's over now, pretty much, in this country. So what are you doing? Dropping a gas tax? No. Okay, so this is from the Labor Department. Highest wholesale price rise for a month on record. That means in the coming months, we're all going to pay even more than we're paying now, because wholesale is what the manufacturers and the transportation people pay. Okay, and then it gets passed on to the consumer. Then in conjunction with that, there's a recession warning, something called the yield curve. And I can't explain it to you. I'm not smart enough, but it's flattening out. When the yield curve flattens out, you're more likely to have a recession, which I think we will have come summer. But I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. Joining us now from Washington, D.C., Kevin Hassett, the former chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors under President Trump. So he worked on economic issues. Were you there all 4 years of Trump? How long were you there?
Almost all 4 years. I left in the summer, and then I went back for COVID. So I was only gone for 6 months of the 4 years.
I have some bullet questions. So in the four sure. years of Trump, no inflation, right?
Correct.
Why?
Basically, supply and demand kept up with each other. Trump had supply-side tax cuts and deregulation, and that meant that there were lots of new businesses, small businesses, new factories brought back to the U.S., and so there was plenty of supply. And when there's plenty of supply, then the suppliers compete for your demand, and that keeps the prices low. What Biden's
okay, that
done
makes sense
is
to me.
Declared
I under-
war.
Right.
Excuse
I understood
me?
That, Kevin. Don't now kick your coverage here. Just keep it keep it in my zone. I understand
I
that.
Come on.
Okay. More competition for products drive prices down. I got it. Okay. That's number one. Number two, under Trump, the Fed was printing money like crazy. Because we were spending money. Donald Trump is a big spender on the military and other things. Okay. So the Fed was printing a lot of money, but inflation still didn't go up. Same reason, right. Supply and demand.
There's a big difference between that, and I promise not to kick it more than 45 yards on this one. But what's basically happened since Biden's been in office is that he's been printing checks and mailing them to people, and the Fed has been financing that. And so it's like you're dropping cash from a helicopter onto the economy. And when you do that, then prices go up because everybody's got more money in their pockets. When Trump was doing it, remember, because of Fauci, unfortunately, the economy was shut down. So people didn't necessarily have a paycheck. And so when the government mailed the money, it was just filling a hole. And so Trump filled the hole. Biden gave you money, even though the hole was filled and you were back to normal. And so that's when the helicopter drop happened and inflation got out of control.
Okay. Now, do you believe that Joe Biden understands the last two answers you gave me? Does he have any idea about macroeconomics?
No, I don't think he does.
How about the people around him?
He doesn't really have a macroeconomist in his team except for Janet Yellen. And I think that Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, I'd love to see Bill O'Reilly read some of her writings and then talk about it, because it feels like she's been, you know, rehashing Democratic talking points rather than giving sound economic advice. And that's one of the reasons we're in this mess.
Well, he won't even acknowledge the rise in gasoline, about the simplest economic equation we can give the folks, of a more than a dollar in his first year without Putin. OK, so, I mean, is he going to blame COVID for that when Trump had that too, and, you know, there was plenty of supply of oil when Biden took over, right? You guys were, the supply of oil and gas and everything was about right up to here when Trump left office. But as soon as Biden came in and slapped all the regulations on the industry, the supply went down, correct?
Yeah, that's right, Bill. And you know, the other thing is, having been in the Oval with President Trump and in the Situation Room and everything, one of the things that Biden has said that annoys me the most and angers me the most is he's kind of like saying, look, it's not my fault, it's Putin's fault because he went into Ukraine. But Putin went into Ukraine because Biden is so weak. And so even if you take the Putin argument, you know, then you should still say it's Biden's fault, because there's no way if Trump was in the White House that Putin would have gone into Ukraine.
But Mr. Hassett, I have to point out, that's your opinion. That's not a provable fact. Okay.
That's true.
Now, I hold the same opinion that you do, but I can't put it forth as fact because Putin, I think, is unstable. I don't think he, you know, I don't think Putin's going to come out of this very well, but that's another opinion. But I want to stay in the factual zone here, because what Biden is telling the world and the American people is, hey, I'm going to have no responsibility for this bad economy here. I don't have any responsibility for the rise in gas and food prices. And that is a factual lie. It's just a lie.
Right. You're right about that. And it's the same thing that President Obama did. You might recall, they told us when the economy was terrible that it's the new normal. They use these fancy words, secular stagnation. But they said it's the new normal. The economy can't grow fast ever again. And it's not our fault. And so once again, we have Democrats in the White House and the economy's not doing so well. And they're once again claiming it's not their fault. But at some point, that pattern, I think, will be recognizable to, citizens, and they'll do something about it.
And here's my most important question of the week, I think, not just the night. So I think there's going to be a recession as companies now are feeling the pain because they have higher costs across the board, including higher salaries. Because the workforce is shaky, there aren't enough employees. We're looking for people at BillO'Reilly.com now, editorial people. I mean, it's not easy to find them. So if you have to spend more money on employees, on products, then you got to cut someplace else. So, do you think there's going to be a recession?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a recession, and I think it's going to happen. Because the Fed isn't going to control inflation with the tiny little interest rate hikes that it's going to give us over the next, 5 or 6 months, and that they're going to have to really whack the economy. And so the summer might be a little early, but by next January, sadly, I think that we're likely to have a recession. And here's a couple of things that are facts, not opinion, Bill, to stick on the table. Fact one is, if you look at what's happening at the gas pump and at the grocery store, then in March, when we get the inflation numbers for March, they're going to be like maybe up about 2% or up about 20% at an annual rate. And so it's going to be the highest inflation that we've seen any time in the post-war period for March. And so with inflation that high, there's an enormous amount of pressure on the Fed to do something. But the only thing they could do is to raise interest rates. And the history of this is that inflation doesn't start going down until the interest rate is higher than the inflation rate. That's like a very regular pattern in the data. Again, that's just the truth. There's no way the Fed's going to lift the interest rate to 10%. But until they do, inflation's going to stay a serious problem.
That's really depressing.
I'm sorry.
It really is depressing because, yeah. I mean, people, a lot of Americans, they don't have a lot of reserves. And the only good news is that Biden and the Democratic Party are going to get their butts kicked in November. It has to happen. I mean, Americans are just going to go, enough. We don't care who it is. We don't want you. And I think that will happen. And that might actually help the price stability and the economy if the Republicans get in a position of power in Washington. Final question. If you are right and a recession kicks in, so America then becomes weakened on the world stage because the stronger our economy is, the stronger our nation is. And so where do we find optimism here? Okay, where do we, the people, find optimism? Obviously, 80 million people voted for Joe Biden. They all, every single one of them, made a mistake in doing that, right? But now we have to recover. Can we recover quickly?
Right. Bill, I hope I can come back and we can talk for a long time about this, but briefly, what I can say is people need to know that this is an easy problem to fix if you understand it. You understand it. I understand it. If there was somebody in Congress and in the White House that knew how to, what to do, which is like be friendly to supply, be friendly to small business, increase supply. If you do all that, then you can get ahead of the curve on inflation without causing a recession. And the last thing I want to say, just because I know that there are a lot of people that are watching that might be worried about this, is the people on Social Security, people on fixed incomes, thank goodness those checks are adjusted for inflation. So I know that there's a lot of pain from the inflation, but our senior citizens on fixed incomes getting Social Security, their checks are going to go up because of this inflation rate. And so, they shouldn't panic about it.
Real quick, would you suspend the federal gas tax now to give people immediately relief?
That's not my first thing, but I would do that. Yeah, the first thing I would do is basically allow, right now ships aren't allowed to move U.S. oil from city to city within the U.S. because of this crazy thing called the Jones Act. So the first thing I would do is let Americans buy U.S. energy and try to expand U.S. energy. That'd have a big positive effect.
Yeah, just take all the regulations for 6 months off this insane attempt to get us off fossil fuels. That's a given. But I don't know why Biden's not dropping that federal gas tax. I mean, that would do him good if he did it. But again, I think you're correct in the top of the interview by saying he doesn't know what the deuce is going on. And that's really depressing. Mr. Hassett, we'll definitely have you back. In fact, I'm going to anoint you our go-to economic guy. It was very good.
And
if I can understand it, then I know you did your job well. And thanks for helping us out. We appreciate it.
Thanks. It's an honor to be here.
Everything is expensive these days. You know that. The government is printing trillions of dollars in consumer prices higher than ever. If the government continues its printing and spending, the dollar could continue its free fall and lose its coveted role as the world reserve currency. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But there are a few things you can do right now. American Hartford Gold can show you how to protect your money, your retirement, your hard-earned savings against inflation by helping you diversify a portion of your portfolio into physical gold and silver. Start with a short phone call, and they can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or put inside your 401k or IRA. So please call or text them right now. Tell them Bill O'Reilly sent you. Call 877-444-GOLD, 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. Again, that's 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. All right, so joining us now from Hamburg, Germany, is Dr. Aaron Rhodes. He's a human rights advocate, senior fellow in the Common Sense Society. I wanted to get, Doctor, your view from Europe. There's low-level hysteria here because of the rising gas prices and the falling stock market in the USA. What's going on over there where you are?
Well, Bill, I'm an American citizen, and I, you know, for me, Germany is sort of a pit stop. It's like a place to live, and I have my family here. So I'm really not such a good person to give a good gauge of German public opinion or political movement. But it seems to me that life is the same here. I don't notice any hysteria. There's no panic buying in grocery stores. There's what there is, however, which is interesting, is a major change of public opinion as regard Russia. The government has done a complete turnaround in their policies. They are realizing that energy dependence on Russia is a bad thing. And they're realizing that they have been underpaying their defense spending. They have now pledged to bring up their defense spending as part of NATO. And these are big changes, and they have occurred very quickly. And this is a very, very notable.
Would it be fair to say that Putin has united all of Europe against him, or are there dissenters?
Oh, sure, there are dissenters. You'll find small pro-Russian demonstrations in many European countries. But in general, people are outraged by this war. And I think they didn't believe such a war could happen. So it's kind of a wake-up call for a lot of European populations.
The shock of realizing that Give Peace a Chance and the peace movement, the Green Movement to some extent, because the Green Movement is responsible for Europe's weakness. You know, it used to be, and I guess you know this, it used to be in Germany that they harvested a lot of natural gas on German soil. Well, the Greens knocked that out. So they have to buy natural gas from Putin. And so it looks like a lot of liberal tenets are falling by the wayside because of this aggression by Russia. Would I be wrong on that assessment?
No, I don't think so. But it's, you know, you have to remember that prior to this invasion, a lot of the peace movement types were taking a very pro-Putin line. This was NATO's fault. This was America's fault. Aggression on the part of neoliberalism, and so on. I think there's a tendency to blame America first in a situation like this. And it's a kind of residual hangover from the past.
What about the media in Germany, where you are? Are they anti-Putin now? Like most of the media here is, not all of it, but most of the media in America is anti-Putin. Is it the same in Germany and the rest of Europe?
I think it's becoming much more anti-Putin, if you can call it that. And that's what I was mentioning before. There's been a very quick change. And now all the so-called the Putin Versteers, so-called the Putin understanders, this was a kind of tendency in German political thought to try to understand Putin and give him some credit. They're very quiet. And maybe they even deny that they once had those views.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad to hear all of what you're saying. Final question for you. You're a human rights advocate. And, you know, you're going to be looking at 3 million refugees out of Ukraine at least before this is over. You're going to be looking at thousands of civilian deaths and, you know, children brutalized for the rest of their lives. So I don't see it possible that Putin just goes back, even if he says, well, yeah, we'll have a ceasefire. I don't see if it's possible that he goes back to where he was. Do you?
No. And Putin is going to come under indictment from the International Criminal Court and maybe some other bodies. So
why would this guy do this if he's ruined his whole life, as I laid out, his whole, you know, all the money he stole, he can't spend, can't float around on his yacht anywhere. They'll grab it. Why? I think the guy's a madman. What do you say?
I don't think he's a madman. I think he's living in a different mental universe than we are. And he interprets history differently than we do. And he sees the destiny of his country and his own personal destiny differently than we do.
Yeah, but he got to know how much trouble he's in. I mean, he's even threatening, you know, now sanctions are an act of war and I got my nuke boys on it. He's got to know that he's toast. Last word.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope he is.
Okay, Doc. I appreciate it. Stay safe over there, Hamburg, Germany, Dr. Aaron Rhodes. So you'll remember that we had 4 history shows with Donald Trump. You'll also remember that beginning back in the summer of 2021, the left-wing websites tried to undermine those shows. Politico was the first one. And it's basically they put out that the tickets weren't selling. That's how you do that, all right? That it's a bomb and Trump and O'Reilly, they're a bunch of idiots and nobody's going to come see them. Interestingly enough, you know, of course, I put the record out of what was really happening because it's my production company. My production company produced all 4 shows. So I knew every second what was happening. But the left-wing websites, they don't care. The left-wing networks couldn't care less about the truth. But interestingly enough, after the shows in February, when all the accounting was in, the Washington Post wrote an article saying how much money Trump got. And it was astronomical. Nobody picked it up. Nobody. Even though the Washington Post wire goes to every newspaper in the country. Nobody. See? Now, I don't care. I was happy the shows were successful. We sold more than 35,000 tickets for 4 shows at, you know, a hefty ticket price. I mean, it's phenomenal in the middle of a COVID epidemic. Come on. But anyway, far more valuable than the coin, than the money, was the editorial information that flowed to the audience who came to see us. Now, some of you did, watching me right now, you got to know you heard stuff that was amazing that you never heard before. Now, in every show beginning on December 11th, I asked President Trump about Putin because I knew Putin was going to cause trouble. So we've strung the sound bites together. I think you'll find it very interesting. Roll the tape.
All right, we're going to begin with Putin because Putin is obviously in the news and a very, very serious and important story. So,
thank you.
Okay, guys. Let's go. We want to get a lot of stuff on the record, all right? Okay, so is Putin a dangerous man?
He's a smart man. He's got a lot of energy. He's at the top of his game. And he'll take advantage of people if they let him. You know, I ended the pipeline. The biggest thing they've ever done was the pipeline. I ended it. Then they say, oh, he loves Russia. Putin even said, why do you have to keep taunting me with the pipeline? I said, I have to do it. But we had a good relationship, and nobody ever treated him tougher than I did. He is a man that's very smart, and he will take advantage, as we should do the same thing. But
would you be surprised if he sends Russian troops into Ukraine? Would you be surprised?
Not anymore, I wouldn't. You didn't hear about this threat when I was president. You didn't hear about Taiwan, where they're sending bombers all over the place in Taiwan. They have to respect your president. They have to respect your country. You know, I never realized, obviously, being president is very important, but maybe to that extra little length, I never realized how important, because you send a signal as president. And I told President Xi of China, you can't do Taiwan, you can't do it. I won't say exactly what I said, but you would have been very impressed, this audience. And Putin and I, same thing. Look, when you do what I did to with sanctions, which are the biggest in the history of our country against Russia, when you do what I did with the pipeline, he respected us. He respected us. He no longer respects our country.
So I'm trying to assess Putin and Xi. Who between the two is a bigger threat to America?
When you have nuclear, everybody's a threat.
Yeah, but
it's a different ballgame.
There's two individuals who can order the nuclear weapons.
Right, let me tell you about both. I know both of them even better than I know you, and I know you pretty well, but I know
it's
both of them even better. I would say this, both very, very strategic, very, very smart. They both love their countries. They really do. They love their countries. They were afraid of this country, of our country. They're no longer afraid. They have no fear of our country anymore. They have no fear because of the leadership. A year ago, they had tremendous respect and fear, whatever you want to call it. Today, they have none. I think they're both at the top of their game. Our gentleman is not at the top of his game. But most importantly, I'm not sure he ever was. If you look back at his record, if you look back at the decisions he's made over a 40-year period, he has never been at the top of his game.
We'll get to him. Does Putin speak English?
Probably. You know, it's very funny because he'll say hello. President Xi doesn't say hello. He goes only through the interpreter, but I think he understands exactly what's happening. They all do. They're all at the top of their game. Yeah, I think Putin does. I've had conversations, which I think he does pretty well with it, but he never likes to do it in public. So when people say something behind his back, he knows exactly what they're saying.
Yeah, he says, you know. Do you believe that he is capable of pulling the nuke card out? Is Putin capable of that?
You mean of using the nuke or of pulling it out?
Of using it.
I don't think he wants to use it. No, he's a smart guy, and I don't think he wants to use it because he knows that's the end of Russia. That's the end of a lot of things. It's really the end of the world. It's the single biggest problem we have today. Not global warming. We'll all take care of global warming. The ocean will rise 1/100th of an inch within the next 400 years. You know? No. Nuclear warming.
So he's not unstable, and you don't see him as a madman.
No, not at all.
All right, so I have a little bit of disagreement right now with Donald Trump. So I hope you, I thought it was fascinating. You know, I was there, and I watched that clip. I was watching it intently. Because remember, that was, those conversations were December 11th and 12th. And nobody knew what really was going to happen.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now, here's a serious story. As you know, I was a high school teacher. When you're a high school teacher, the only way to control your class of urchins is to have discipline in class, okay? And you are not a good teacher or a value teacher to the urchins unless your discipline is fair across the board. You have to teach all the kids the same. You have to discipline all the kids the same. You have to be fair. All right, I knew that going in, which is why I controlled my classrooms. I very rarely had any trouble. I was tough, but I was fair. Tacoma, the Clover Park School District, suburb of that city in Washington State. 12,000 students, okay? Now, discipline in the Clover Park schools, not going to be based on what the urchins are doing. It's going to be based on their skin color. Roll the tape.
Since this meeting, parents have been commenting on the Clover Park School District public Facebook page, with many believing the policy change would, quote, likely offer harsher punishments to white students, even if the conduct is identical to that of a black or Hispanic student.
Another insanity from the progressive left. Now, you have to understand, California, Oregon, Washington State, in the big cities, all right, San Diego may be an exception, South California, but all the other big cities up the coast are crazy progressive left. LA, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, Tacoma is attached to Seattle. Okay, so now this school board votes that if a black kid gets out of line and does something, the discipline that black student gets is not the same, is less than what a white student would get. It is called culturally responsive discipline. Now, I know I'm going to get letters that say, oh, it's not against the law. There's no law that says high school teachers have to be fair. And all rules in a high school or grammar school or middle school have to be enforced equally. There's no law. Maybe there should be, but there isn't. These local school boards can do what the deuce they want to do. And now, in this school district, Clover Park, if you're a white kid, your punishment is going to be harsher than a minority kid. You can't run a school like that because it divides the children. It pits them against each other, progressive loons. We are all Americans. We are all subject to the same laws. If you are going to pervert that, if you are going to single out a group, no matter what group it is, for special treatment, you disintegrate the fabric of our society. Now, I would never in a million years send my kids to any school that did that. And that's what should happen in Clover Park. Every parent, pull that kid out, put him in a private school. Private school would be happy to have him. And then they won't have anybody in the school. Even the African-American parents, is that what you want? Unequal justice? Boy, just driving me crazy. You think you're going to see this on World News Tonight, Good Morning America, Today's Show? Huh? You think you're going to see this story? You're not. That's why they get away with it. At least the Seattle local media did it.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, time now for the final thought. Saturday night, I went to see Sebastian Maniscalco. You know him? The comedian over at UBS in the Queens Nassau line. Sold the place out. 19,000 comedians. I've never seen anything like it. He sold out Madison Square Garden two nights before. Guy is on fire. And he is hysterical. Roll the tape.
Everybody's living their life through Facebook. Videos. You're going to see it soon. Wedding season is just around the corner. You're going to see wedding videos from the wedding. Of this choreographed dance that the groom and the groomsman, have you seen this? Like, the groom is dancing with the bride, and then all of a sudden, the lights go up. And then the bride's like, what's going on? Oh my God. And 9 of the groomsmen come out and do a 12-minute routine. I got married 5 years ago. I couldn't get my groomsmen to go get their tuxedos fitted. Let alone come to my house and rehearse.
The guy, he's just brilliant. He's a performance artist. And we all need laughs. Boy, do we need laughs, okay? So you can check him out on YouTube and see, you know, what he does. I've seen him 3 times now, and I know him a little bit. He's a good guy. Chicago guy, a lot of Italian humor, which I like. But to see that crowd respond to him on Saturday night, the 19,000 of them, it was really uplifting because, again, we live in a very, very intense time. And that was part of the Smith thing. He's so tightly wound, Will Smith. They're all out there in Hollywood so tightly wound because their whole industry is falling apart. It's falling apart right before their eyes. They're like this. The jobs are fewer. The salaries are fewer. I mean, Will Smith, you know, he's just like, and they all are. There's nobody, you know. Oh. So if Will had seen Maniscalco instead of Chris Rock, that probably wouldn't have happened. All right, so it was a very enjoyable. Maniscalco did about an hour 20. It wasn't a dead moment. It was just one after the other after the other. So I'm happy to give him some publicity, and I'm happy he made me laugh. And if you check him out, you'll be happy too. Thanks for watching us tonight. We will see you tomorrow.